kpft.org with the subject line Music Volunteer. We'll take it from there. This is 90.1 FM, KPFT Houston, kpft.org worldwide.
If you have friends in other cities who wish they had access to some of the great programming you hear on this station and the Pacifica Radio Network, we have a website for you.
PacificaNetwork.org gives community radio stations like this one complete information on how to become a Pacifica affiliate and information for listeners looking for community radio stations that air Pacifica programming.
With the launch of PacificaNetwork.org, Pacifica Radio is bringing together frequently requested items regarding Pacifica as a network.
Nearly 100 radio stations.
From Carbondale, Colorado to Benwood, West Virginia.
From Bend, Oregon to Hobbs Ferry, New York.
From Moscow, Idaho to Chicago, Illinois.
Have all made a statement by linking up and carrying Pacifica radio programming.
So tell your far-flung friends about PacificaNetwork.org to connect communities.
This is Pacifica Radio, KPFT, Houston.
You're listening to 90.1 FM. KPFT, Houston.
Listeners should be aware that the following program contains language and audio images which may be found disturbing and may not be suitable for your snotty-nosed little brat who probably cusses like a sailor behind your back anyway. Parental discretion is advised.
Why, hello there. What are you wearing tonight? Oh, we're on the air. Hi, welcome to another edition of Technology Bites. I was just talking to the janitor.
Ew.
Stop.
Sigh.
Sigh.
Houston, mid-40s. Single.
Is that the weather or your ASL?
ASL.
Also sounds like, or what?
Also sounds like.
All right, welcome to Technology Bites. I'm Jay Lee.
I'm Peter Hughes.
I'm Flicted.
I'm Barrett.
I'm Lee.
And he's
Drew House.
All right, perfect show.
Done. Thanks, everybody.
Good night.
Good night, everybody.
That's only because we got Pete in the studio tonight. Came in. These cheap gas prices are paying off for all of us,
wow.
Aren't they?
Yeah.
You can drive to Houston from San Antonio they practically pay you to drive to Houston now.
Don't can't they? Afford not to.
Yeah, I paid $1.75 a gallon to come over here.
Jeez.
Take that.
What? Awesome.
The power of Costco gas prices, but yeah.
Yeah, still.
Which, as I flash back to middle of last year when it was $4.25 or whatever. Yeah, that's a little different. My wallet does not hurt when I leave the gas station to come over here.
Well, you have to have, I think of money as nerve endings. You have to have nerve endings to feel pain, so my wallet never hurts. All right, welcome to the show. This is Technology Bites. This is going to be, wow, it snuck up on us, but fundraiser starts next week, so just warn you about that. So this is your time to let us know about what?
Hit the tip jar. Help us out early.
Yeah, that would be awesome.
Pre-pledge.
If you go to kpft.org and hit the tip jar. So we have some money in the bank when we start up next
year. Earmark it for Technology Bites.
Yeah, just make sure you mention our name. And it'd be a vote. It would be a way to find out if this new format's catching on. And we'd love to hear your feedback in the forms of financial contributions.
And if you listen to the podcast from, like, around the country, or if you're listening to one of the stations that doesn't pledge drive, you know, doesn't use our show as their pledge drive thing, you know, but you listen to us every week, yeah, we have no problem with you calling Houston long distance and pledging or using the tip jar.
Or you can go online and use the tip jar. You don't even have to incur. I mean, who pays long distance anymore?
You can go on.
My parents.
Really?
You can go long distance on the web.
Yeah, 1-800-WWW.KPFT.org.
It's only 7 cents per URL.
That's a lot.
Daytime rates may apply. Click after dark.
Please.
That's when we put like 1,000 one-by-one transparent pixels on there.
Yes.
What he said.
Yes.
All right, visit us online at geekradio.com. That's the website, and that's pretty much geek gathering announcements and podcasts for the most part, but they're all there.
There isn't. So I noticed the Technology Bites Twitter account is not linked from the website.
It doesn't tweet much.
Well, maybe you should tweet some out of it.
Maybe I should.
Because I use Twitter all the time. That's like my one concession to social
media.
Maybe
we'll put Lee in charge of it.
If we hand over the keys of the kingdom to Lee, we may all find ourselves out in the cold.
It's just going
to
be swear words and cat pictures.
No, that's Dwight.
Swear words and cat pictures.
I was going to say, you're going to share the password with Dwight?
Soylent menus.
Dwight would be an amazing steward of the Twitter account.
Hey, did Soylent just get like a huge round of funding?
Andreessen,
they did.
Horowitz or whatever.
They did. I got the press release, and I didn't get a chance to write it up today.
Haven't gotten the chance to buy the stock yet.
The rest of the vitals.
No, disclosure. I don't buy stock in things that I report on. That would be bad.
Just joking. Yeah.
Rest of the vitals, Jay.
No, it's all about ethics and
something. Ethics and something.
Hey, Jay.
Yeah.
Groovehouse wants your vitals.
No.
My blood pressure's right.
What's your ulcer sound like?
Oh.
Here, check my
just
pulse.
Keeping it on track.
No, not there. So,
hey-o.
All right, so you can visit us online at geekradio.com. You can also hang out on the IRC with us, irc.cuckoo.com, in the channel Tech Bites. We also have an IRC client on the webpage if you want to join in that way. That's the show within a show.
All the cool kids use IRC.
They sure do. It's like Twitter for
old people.
I was going to say for grown-ups, but no.
Twitter, yeah, for gray-bearded people.
You know, it would be cool if you could, like, kick-ban people on Twitter. I guess you kind of can,
you
but
can
not
you
really.
Mute them.
You
can
it's
mute
not
them.
The same effect,
stop following
though. It's
them.
Not as personal.
You can report them for spam.
You can stop following them.
Which is satisfying.
Or you could have 30,000 bots follow them.
See, on the internet, how do people know if you're ignoring them?
You have to tell
it really
them
doesn't
first.
Have that effectiveness. Like Twitter, you know, the IRC kickban is like if someone was in the room talking to you, you grab them by the neck, throw them out the door, and lock it.
There's no bumps rush equivalent for Twitter.
Where on Twitter, it's like you're in a stadium with all these other people, and you're ignoring the guy in seat 200D. But you're on the other side of the stadium.
Like
how does he know
a,
you're ignoring him?
I like to take a screenshot of me blocking that person and then unblock them and then at message them the screenshot and then reblock them so they can watch me block them.
You should macro that just for one button. Like
block.
No,
screen
that,
cap,
that would be
unblock,
a new,
tweet,
that should be
block.
A new, there'd be an app. I'm always on the lookout for the new Yo, which would be an app that tells people you're ignoring them. That they can't answer back.
What's the one word air safe version of Yo that would be like I'm blocking you? What's the word for that?
Twap.
Nope.
Twap. I've twapped you.
It's a twap.
It's a twap.
All right. So the IRC's going. The phone number if you want to you want to call in a little bit later on, we're asking calls to kind of be on topic. We're going to have a number of different topics we're going to cover.
We're asking the host to stay on topic, too. No guarantees.
Especially with Lee in the building.
Yeah.
713-526-5738. So the first thing, Pete actually is taking on more of a leadership role in the program and giving us guidance as we go into this brave new frontier of 2015.
You're making
Technology
me
Bites.
Feel like I'm at work, Dwight. Dwight, you're making me feel like I'm at work, Jay.
Look, I don't have a cat.
Yet.
Yeah. You guys are basically two sides of the
review
same
faster,
coin.
Lee. Pick this up.
All right. So, Pete, what do we got?
Next up, I think it's time to push the button.
Oh, the button.
The button. Is there a new button?
No.
Is he prepared for it? No, he's not.
Perfect show.
It's the Technology Bites Info Shot. Technology news and commentary by Peter Hughes. Injected directly into your skull.
Yeah, it's real short. Few quick headlines to start off the show. This one's an interesting one, I think. We've been following it. After months of speculation about how the Federal Communications Commission would act on the new open internet rule, the agency is beginning to show its cards, and Congress is starting to react as well. There are not any specifics provided to the public yet. It's due to circulate its proposal internally February 5th, and its members are set to vote on the final rule at the end of February. Last week, the chairman of the FCC indicated that the regulatory scheme will lean on authority that net neutrality advocates, including President Barack Obama, have been clamoring for it to use. Translated into English from like political news article speak, the net neutrality side, the idea is that your internet broadband connection is a utility and that it can be regulated as such. Actually, the president was in Cedar Rapids, Iowa today. Why would anybody go to Cedar Rapids, Iowa? With
you have
apologies
something
to
against the great state of Iowa?
No, it's a great place to go when it's in between where you are and where you want to get to, is in my opinion. No, I was nice, but Cedar Rapids is not usually a thing that politically connected people get on planes and go to. But no, he went there because they are one of the cities that has wired themselves with gigabit Ethernet. And so he was highlighting that and pushing on that's why we should have more of this. And he actually went a little farther. He's talking about the FCC using its power of preemption to basically eliminate. We've talked about the state governments that have made it illegal for local municipalities to do their own broadband when they don't feel like there's enough competition. Well, the FCC, if they do the utility thing, and if they don't have to because they're an independent agency. But the president basically suggested that they also make it possible for any community that wants to build out its own broadband infrastructure, that it not be prevented by the state legislature. Now, I've already gotten a press release that talked about how the FCC was infringing on the freedom of those states to regulate their own stuff. So just, you know, the irony alert was going off in my head because, of course, those states that are upset about that are essentially preventing local towns, which I think you'd be talking, that's the closest to the ground you get as far as democracy goes, that they would not be allowed to decide for themselves if they want to have broadband.
No, Peter, that's getting government into things.
Getting government into things, and where we want government to keep government out of things so that big companies can do it without any competition.
It just absolutely just blows my mind how upside down it is when you look at laws prohibiting municipal broadband, which is, I mean, this isn't even like a theoretical thing. This is like, if you want to look at successful municipal broadband deployments, look at basically everyone that's happened within like the past 10 years. They're all great. Chattanooga is an excellent example, but there are tons of other ones where local municipalities have deployed, you know, gigabit fiber to the premises for their residents, and they provide it for generally a cost that would make any, you know, Comcast or Cox cable paying customer just choke on their Cheerios, like 30, 40 bucks a month for gigabit access. And the response from all the incumbent telcos and internet providers is that this is totally unfair to us. This is a misuse of government funds to undercut our business, and you're stifling competition by doing this. While meanwhile, every customer who's got it is jumping through the roof with happiness because they don't have to deal with being a, you know, big ISP customer anymore.
And dealing with spending twice as much money for a 20th as much speed.
It's like we're living in bizarro land when you see stuff like that. Anyway, so
the internet companies need to figure out, you know, how, you know, these other organizations took, like, water and convinced us that we needed to buy it in bottles instead of drinking it from the tap. So they could have some kind of Comcast.
Well, give us really, really fast. That's the whole thing. If they gave us much, much faster than municipal, have that there. Give us like 50 megs. Give us 100 megs locally. Right. And then I would pay to have like a gig, you know, like a really, really fast connection. But somehow 15 years ago, once we got past DSL and that first little wave of cable, just, you know, speed stalled out in the U.S. You look at Europe and it's awesome. You know, South Korea, it's triple awesome. Here, it's like, eh.
Yeah, yeah. And at some point, that's going to make our country less competitive.
No, yeah, well, aside from the NSA getting into everything,
of course, look who the biggest broadband providers are: Comcast and Time Warner Cable.
Right.
And if suddenly people have gigabit, then the cord cutting idea starts looking even better than it does already.
And it's not so much like gigabit is a magic number. I mean, it's nice to have. It would be great to have, especially if you've got the capability and the desire to use it and run servers and everything. But the raw bandwidth's only half of it. The other half of it is not being, you know, not being under contract and forced to do business with these massive, you know, oligopical, whatever you call it, these
oligarchical.
Massive oligarchical, oligopical companies that, you know, the two of them pair off and control markets and lock you into contracts and make you overpay. And then when something goes wrong, you've got to call into the customer service nightmare from hell line and deal with, you know, all of that insanity. That's like a whole other separate thing aside from the speeds, is the fact that municipal broadband you're dealing with, if something goes wrong generally, especially in the case of stuff like Chattanooga or some of the U.S. internet stuff around the Twin Cities areas, you're dealing with local companies that have small local help desks staffed with people who will take your call and know how to fix your problem and are very polite, and then you get off the phone and you're done.
It's just weird how these towns are doing, you know, how they could do that, how they would think that the local government should do that. I mean, look at the example of roads. I mean, all our towns, we have companies come in and supply the road, and you wait until the road company comes to your house so that you can hook up and, you know, get decent speed.
Well, that's the only way.
So this
that's
idea
the only
of
fair
government
way to do it,
pouring
Peter.
Money into networks as if it was like roads that the government could supply something that, oh, everybody could use fairly. And benefit from. Well, that's just absurd.
Haven't you driven on the Comcast physical highway that goes right next to the information Comcast highway? It only costs you $300 per mile to drive on our highway, and it's way awesome.
Well, what I hate is when you're sitting there on the Comcast special highway that you pay extra to be on and watching the Netflix trucks just fly by you.
No.
They've got the special extra.
They're making extra that illegal, aren't they? That's one of the moves.
Yes.
Is Obama's trying to make it illegal for any kind of payouts to get preferred
network
treatment.
Basically, net neutrality would be that they have to treat all the traffic the same, and so it would go back to...
And that's another... I mean, I don't want to derail totally, but that's another, like, bizarro land thing, where it's like the explanation that you hear from a lot of the companies on what the thing is versus... When you split it open, what the thing actually is like totally inverse from what you'd think it would be. It's not an issue of, you know, vote against this to keep the government out of our lives. It's an issue of we need this because private industry, the broadband industry, has proven that they are poor stewards of the public trust, and they handle this in a dumb, inefficient, terrible way. And it's not theoretical. All you have to do is look at here's how life is right now. This is what we face. This is what deregulation has turned into, and this is how it is. And then we'd like to change it, and this is how you do it.
And then another news headline. This one, you know, Stephen Hawking said the thing about, you know, AI could be the death of us all. And the Mary Sue had a great article about there's now an open letter signed by actual experts in artificial intelligence that urges everyone to make sure that they build their AI to factor, quote, is this good for humans, unquote, into its decisions. It's like, The signatories include Elon Musk and Stephen Hawking, both of whom have recently expressed concern about AI and whether or not we're going to Tony Stark ourselves right into an Ultron situation.
Well, yeah, but like then you got like will the machines be able to wait decisions? Like, what if there is a decision that is good in aggregate for all humans but bad for some humans?
Well, yeah, I think once the
needs of the many outweigh the needs of the few or the one.
What were you going
to
say, Barrett?
I was going to say, once they get close to that, you know, like what Kurzweil calls kind of the singularity and when, you know, just the technology speeds up so fast, I think that they're just going to mainly ignore humans. I don't think they're really going to care. And I think whatever kind of programming we build in, they're going to supersede that so quickly that it's going to be irrelevant. You know?
If only a really, really smart and clever science fiction writer hadn't figured out what we needed to do about what technology
like
needed to think about and like put it into, you know, like a rule of three things people can remember,
three
like three things.
No, see, I've got my defense. If the super smart AIs come in and want to put me in the human zoo and just ignore me, I'm going to look those super smart AIs in the eye and I'm going to say, everything I say is a lie. And then I'm going to run while they try to figure that one out.
They're going to say, aha, we have already seen your Star Trek. Leave your shirt on. Let's not confuse us anymore if you take it off.
Did you ever read the book by Robert Forward called Dragon's Egg?
I have not.
It's a science fiction book about discovering this race of beings that, you know, that they're about the size of sesame seeds. And the timeline for them and their evolution is growing about a million times faster than ours. So from the point that we discover them, that they exist in their Stone Age, they evolve beyond us during the same time as we're just discovering them.
That's brilliant.
And to the point, the story is, it's a really good book because it's going through the time frame of us and then it goes through their time frame and as they're evolving. And at the point where the woman scientist is observing this race of beings and they discover space travel and they fly on out.
While she's like, I've got the microscope.
Right, and as they're passing by, they zap her breast cancer. Off they go.
Because from her perspective, she's been the watcher who's been there for trillions of years.
The all-seeing eye has looked down upon them I think it's in a similar way with the AI. I mean, if it does achieve awareness and has all the resources, how would we even know to do anything?
That's the singularity. Yeah,
I think that we should think that one of the sources that all AI should be able to understand and have knowledge of every episode of The Simpsons, because I'm increasingly convinced that the sum of human knowledge is contained in there.
Because
that Dragon's Egg story, Lisa Simpson with the little shrunken society that her in.
You know what? Honestly,
very similar.
An AI with a comprehensive knowledge of Simpsons and Star Trek actually would probably be a pretty cool AI to get along with.
It would embiggen all of humanity.
That's a very cromulent description.
Which I think we're still really far away from it. Like in the 70s, everyone was like, AI's right around the corner. We're going to get there. And they realized, wow, AI is really hard. And we're kind of there now. Even like with Watson, with these computers that can beat humans at Jeopardy, really it's just search and it's just doing tricks that programmers are teaching them. It's not like they go out and they understand and comprehend these questions.
Right.
It's getting through it. So as much as I want to go and spit polish, that sounds bad. As much as I want to welcome our new robotic overlords, I don't think it's going to happen anytime soon.
You want to spit polish?
I was going to say spit polish. Yeah, I mean, that's the one way I figure I can fit in, because they're going to be able to code better than us. They're going to be able to do most things. So I think humans
are going to
be fun.
Who's going to shine their shiny?
That's right. That's, hey, Flicted.
So, and finally on the news, on headlines, and then we can, I think this segues nicely into a larger discussion. There was an article, VentureBeat, they're venture capitalists, they're thorough. The thing they went through and distilled out what they think were the top 11 tech trends of the Consumer Electronics Show. And see, we can BS test that with somebody who actually went there and got overwhelmed by the tidal wave of information.
Hiding under my chair, drooling and rocking back and forth by the
So their top trends, they said, were the Internet of Things is real but expensive. So it's all high-end stuff, high-end appliances, et cetera, to do that. They say number two, the car is the new supercomputer. I think that may be like a nifty headline, but clearly the car is a place where technology, the car companies have obviously figured out that they need to improve their tech, and they've been working with Ford's been working with Microsoft for a while now, and now Android and NVIDIA and others.
Yeah,
are
Ford
into
is
it.
I think severing some of their Microsoft partnerships now. I think they're moving on to QNX or something. I know they're changing what they're doing.
Number three, smart appliances need ecosystems and standards. That makes sense. Virtual reality has its leaders and its competitors. Mm-hmm. Obviously, you've got Oculus VR, but there are others that are coming up quickly on them. Number five, 4K TV goes mainstream, but there's more to come. Let's see, next page.
Turn tape over.
Yeah. The B-side. No, sorry, I should have caught that before the show and preloaded it. Six, wearables are exploding, but you may not want to buy them yet, especially since they're exploding.
We'll take off an appendage, yeah.
Now, they're obviously, there's a lot of people. I think part of why there were a lot of wearables at CES is a bunch of people trying to run out and trying to be ahead of the Apple wave if it's going to happen. I don't know that anybody's sure one way or the other with it. Some, you know, there are people on both sides. Oh, number seven, tech is helping the lazy, the disabled, and the rich. It's a neat line. And eight, last year's tech has become real. So one good example, Intel's been talking about the RealSense depth camera for laptops and tablets for a long time, but it's finally shipping in actual devices such as the Dell Venue 8 7000 series Android tablet. Wow, could Dell, you know what? I thought Dell went private so that they could get rid of the kind of overburdened, you know, having to answer to too many committees. I'm thinking Steve Jobs would take Dell Venue 8 7000 series Android tablet, write it out in all caps on a popsicle stick, and show Michael Dell how shorter names are better.
Dell has and will have for a long time, and I'm sure we have listeners who love Dell and who work for Dell, but they have a cultural problem, and it's going to take a long time to go away before they stop being Dell.
Number nine, Asian companies are emerging as the strongest. I think that, you know, obviously we talked about that some last week. And number 10, drones and robots are multiplying.
Very. Now, that one's absolutely true.
And that's just sort of come out of nowhere. Although part of it, I think, is, you know, something's really become big when the name for it changes. Because radio control helicopters have been around for a long time, but now once it's a drone and you add a couple more blades to it, suddenly it's everywhere.
Well, the thing about remote control helicopters is that nobody can fly them.
Yeah.
They were impossible.
Much like real helicopters, they're really hard.
Scientifically aren't designed to fly, and put in the hands of amateurs, even radio control experts couldn't fly them.
Do you guys want to know the secret tech journalist drinking game? Because there is one, and I can let you in on what the tech journalist drinking game is.
Quadcopter?
No, and it especially applies around CES. It's very simple.
Cloud?
And, no.
Drone.
Anytime you hear someone say the phrase Internet of Things, you take a shot. And out, like any news broadcast, any keynote, you will get absolutely hammered by the time it's over.
Well, that's this year. Right.
It's been for the past two or three years.
The
this
Internet
year especially.
It's really shown up on my radar this year, and I mean, to the point where even my company is, you know, they're talking about the Internet of Things.
And really, that phrase is totally meaningless, because wouldn't an internet by definition be made up of things? If it's not made up of things, what is it made up of? What is
it? Should be the internet of unlikely things, increasingly more likely things, like refrigerators and thermostats.
Yeah, that's why a lot of companies are shifting away from that absolutely meaningless phrase and talking about more like with cars, with all the vendors, one of the big ones we saw was Qualcomm with all their stuff. They weren't preaching like the Internet of Things or the Internet of Cars. They were calling it their connected car concept. So different verbiage kind of means the same thing. It's like cloud and grid computing, which are basically the exact same thing with different, like, you know, paint on it. But yeah, so that, anyway, that's the
cloud is full of things.
But when the Internet of Things happens, NetBSD will have won.
Yes.
How so? I don't get it.
Because their deal has always been, well, their logo or whatever, their slogan was like, why not? It was always, they wanted to put NetBSD on as many things as possible.
Toasters.
And the big one was a toaster. Like, that was like, why not? They had a picture of, like, little, you know, red demons on a toaster. Like, why not?
So, like, you can...
Yeah, Linux has really kind of won out. I mean, almost all embedded devices these days, from home routers to smartwatches to anything, you know, and even on Apple. I mean, that's a BSD ripoff. You know, it runs Linux. You know, we do... We are around that. The whole Internet of Things, just the idea of putting IP addresses on everything, making everything connected. I kind of... I don't mind the marketing as long as it brings us IPv6 faster, because hopefully it'll just push the... extinction of IP.
That and DNSSEC, right?
Yeah, man. I keep waiting.
You know, my thing is, the Internet of Things won't be real and won't be realized until you can play networked Doom on multiple random things around your house.
You can already play it on, like
your thermostat, your thermostat against your refrigerator or your dryer versus
We're
your
getting there.
Vacuum cleaner. That's when, that's because I think NetBSD, I think, is exceeded by more people are excited about can it run Doom or, I guess, Quake if you're really going to go high end.
We're getting there.
I think you're going to see sensor networks a lot faster than you're going to see the Internet of Things. And that's just like using, like, you know, I guess, let's see, Ethernet is kind of what pushes what most people think of when they think of Internet-connected things. Like, I've got an IP address. But, you know, there are alternate short, like, low-power, short-range networking things like XB and ZigBee. And you even, like, Bluetooth kind of falls into that.
Yeah, Bluetooth.
Where you can connect a
Bluetooth
lot of devices
LED.
All in there. Because, I mean, do you need your refrigerator and your thermostat and everything individually connected to the Internet? Do they need publicly addressable IPs? Or maybe you just have, like, one home controller that sits there. It's the brain. Maybe that's your quote-unquote smart home to bring, a marketing term from 10 years ago.
You're advocating a form of
control
NAT here.
And yeah.
And aren't you as a networking guy generally against NAT anyway?
It's not so much NAT. It's just that I don't think that, you know, I should have to firewall, and we should have to build security. And you should build security in every single appliance. But do you really need to expose, you know, your sock drawer to the Internet? I don't want to see the traffic coming out of there. I think it's, you know, alternate network like dark nets to where things aren't routable. And that's the whole idea behind Class C addresses. But you can get around those with NATing and with things like that. So I like the idea of unroutable. Like, if I've got a smart chip in my boxers, I don't want that routable. You know, that's my business. It's down there. Private network. That's for it.
Unless you're sitting next to Will Wheaton at a bar and somebody sits down and checks it out.
Hey, you want your network keys?
The Internet of Things seems to me to have a lot in common with fitness trackers. Everybody
fitness trackers are part of the Internet of Things.
Yeah, but I mean except the fitness tracker really only like talks to your phone. In a sense, I guess it's the thing is, it just like right now the whole big deal is it kind of gathers some information and it sort of shares it, and that's about all the Internet of Things right now is doing. And it seems to me, on the one hand, I'll give them credit because they've given up on the deal where we're going to come up with this whole new format, this whole new way to network all these devices together and talk and control them. And of course, if you want to be part of the, you know, our Internet of Things, you're going to have to, you know, buy our chip and plug in, you know, pay for our patent.
Well, that's Internet
X10.
They realized that if they had done that, that the Internet would come through.
Well, that comes back
that's the
basic definition of not that's the basic definition of capital I Internet is a compatible set of linked networks communicating with common protocols, and that common protocols part is key. So Internet of Things with a capital I and probably a capital T too, by definition, would have to include things communicating over common sets of profiles, not little islanded things of
that's a plus. That's to their credit that they figured out after 40 years of trying that they couldn't do it themselves. The problem is, though, it's still sort of like the underpants gnomes thing. It's like Internet of Things, step two,
question mark,
step three,
profit.
Or you can also put Internet of Things at the other side of it, too. Step one, Internet of Things, step two, step three, we'll have the Internet of Things.
Barrett wants to create the intranet of things.
Yes, that's what I want. Well, it's bad. Like, so we've got smart
TVs.
There's
no brain, right? Now, there's not. Although, I wonder, is iOS going to, so far as seems to be a front runner with Home?
Well, I think that's where the battle's going. So Microsoft and Apple and maybe even Google, I guess, is in the fray. Amazon's in the fray. Everyone wants to, like, vie for the living room. Like, they want the set-top box. They want the one controller that does everything.
Didn't Firefox just get in that game with Panasonic or somebody? There's some TV company that's actually going to start running a Firefox OS as their TV.
Yeah, I mean, they've got,
TV
Firefox has a mobile
system.
OS. You can go buy it on devices now, mostly in developing markets. But yeah, they've got a mobile OS.
I interrupt this radio broadcast to tell everyone about somebody on the IRC tweeted a link to Quake on an oscilloscope.
Yes.
I've had
awesome.
Dreams that look like this.
Oh. It actually a little bit looks like you're seeing it in code. I mean, that's
looks like, yes,
what
it's
the
like
Wachowski Matrix brothers could have done.
It's the Quatrix.
It looks like somebody's...
They could have saved about, you know,
let me think,
20 million if they had just used an oscilloscope instead of all the CGI they blew
they
off.
Did a,
Jay
they...
Newman or Reflective on IRC sent us that link. So.
They did a an ASCII Doom, right?
There oh, yeah.
There was like an
oh,
ASCII
yeah.
art version, of yep. playable version of Doom. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Have you seen the, we're getting off topic, I know, but have you seen the telnet, where you telnet to that server and it starts doing a little text adventure of Star Wars?
The Star Wars
yes,
one?
Yes, yes,
where it
yes,
actually gives you,
classic.
Like, ASCII version of the entire movie.
The whole Han shot first, everything. All right, so back to the topic.
Well, basically we were talking about CES. The last thing, the 11th item, for those of you, I know we have some OCD listeners who were going, after I got to 10,
oh,
they're
did
like,
we only go to
you
10?
Said there were 11.
This list goes up to 11.
The 11th one is 3D printers will be a bonanza for creators. They said that the smell of burnt plastic was palpable in the 3D printing section of the Sands Expo, where companies like MakerBot showed off faster and easy-to-use 3D printers. HP also showed its Sprout computer, which allows you to visualize prototypes in 3D and then print them out on HP's industrial-sized Fusion 3D printer. That's kind of neat. These devices are going to be a godsend for creators, whether they're product designers, entrepreneurs, or artists who want to easily transfer a design from paper to a digital form, and finally a 3D prototype. That's the biggest thing to me is 3D, the designing the stuff, the kind of CAD software and that, or the 3D. I've looked at 3D animation, and there's been 3D animation software since...
Dog years.
Forever ago, and it always... I was never patient enough.
The learning curve on that is really steep.
Well, now with the scanners, you know, and now the software being able to, like, you can scan.
Yeah, that is really neat. Yeah, so there are commercial packages. That's the biggest disparity right now is, you know, you've got, what, like, MakerBot is charging, you know, like, four figures, you know, easily for their stuff. Or you can go out and you can get a kit for, you know, just a few $100 now. And same thing with the scanners. I mean, they've got a scanner for, again, you know, like, low four figures. Or, you know, I think with the Kinect at DEF CON a couple years ago, we were scanning, you know, things with an open source software package.
Software,
Reviewed just one you can hook up to your iPhone and produce 3D models with, and I'm blanking on the name, but I'll find it here. It was relatively cheap. The structure scanner is what it was called.
Is that just, I guess that's just pure photo based?
It was a combination. It did visible and infrared and a couple of other things, but this was me scanning. I'm looking at my laptop here. This was me scanning the Phantom drone when I had it with the thing, and it would produce models of varying quality.
As you go over it more, does it refine the model?
It does, okay. And it comes with some additional tools. The Phantom drone model that I ended up producing, as you can see, looked not terrible, and if I'd put a lot more time into it, I could have made something with much higher fidelity.
I think a hybrid would be really cool, of where you've got something that can do depth sensing, but then you've also got something that can pick up color. So that's what this was.
It was a visual camera, and then
I thought you meant your actual iPhone was doing
It's a clip-on thing, and it has a visual thing and an infrared thing, and it scans, and it was really cool.
That looks a whole lot like the iMotion Leap, actually.
Which I've got one of those on my desk too, and this actually worked way better than that does.
Well, you would have gotten a kick. When I was in London, I went to the London Science Museum, and they have a whole exhibit set up for 3D printing. We're talking about the future of 3D printing and how they're, you know, for manufacturing, and they've got a thing set up where people that visit the museum, like kids, they do it mostly for kids, it looks like, but they've got a scanner set up, and they'll scan you, and they'll 3D print the kid right there, and so they've got some different displays with different ones that they've done, but it's getting more into the mainstream culture, the ability to... I was just watching NCIS from last night, and they had the 3D printed gun, so...
Which, those guys out of Austin make that. The,
Libertine.
Cody Wilson, I think is his name. Barrett, you've got a MakerBot at home, don't you?
Yeah.
My experience with it was, I had one for a month or so. We purchased one at work, and we sort of passed it around to review, is that if you set your your expectations kind of low, and whatever you're going to make, if you either make a thing that's relatively small, or you take your complicated thing and you make it in segments, mm-hmm. it's actually not a bad experience. But when you go try to really set your sights high and make something that's really complicated, that's where your overnight print invariably craps out at about 8 hours.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing. I think where we are right now, where the software needs to improve, is that they've got most of the bugs worked out of, like, the 3D printers. Like, you're not having the problems where, like, where the extruders are, you know, clogging, or, you know, your stuff is crashing into the dive plate. All that's pretty solid now. The issue is that a lot of the prints come down to how you position the model and how you print the model, like with doing supports. And, like, you know, you can tell the printer to print impossible stuff. So there needs to
And it'll start.
Yeah, and it'll start doing it. So there needs to be some kind of, you know, software. it's really is lame because, you know, these things still take 8, 10, 12 hours, like Lee's saying. And it's like, it's really lame to find out, like, 8 hours into a print, like, wow, I did no structures, I did no supports. So there is some software that'll do supports coming down, but what there needs to be is something that vets and says, hey, this will print, but if you flipped it this way and printed in these two parts and chunked it up, that would be a lot better, because that's still really hard to do, and that's still kind of trial and error right now.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Although that could be an engineering problem. That could be
like kind of a Watson job, though.
Yeah,
understand the engineering and...
Yeah,
I guess it sounds like 3D printing is sort of in a place where computers were in the early 80s, which is to even get one, you had to spend some extra money. And if you had too high expectations, I'm buying a computer. It's going to control my whole house. And
We're out of the kit phase, but we're still in like
KRS-80, Dot Matrix printer,
the Osborne Daisy printer.
We don't really have the OS going to make this thing.
But like everything else, it's not going to be long.
The biggest thing here, I think, is that before it went from hobbyists and stuff, like, you know, people that we would, you know, come out to the Geek Gathering building stuff out of, you know, like, you know, Chinese kits and just, you know, just wherever they could source parts to get the stuff working. And now that you've got some real money in it, now that companies are investing in it, even though they're trying to sell it for wildly way too much money, they're going to be the ones to push the R&D, because we've got the computer stuff. We've got the industrial CNC know-how. We've got a lot of these things. The issue now is just getting it. The price, getting the price down.
The investors, they're just dumb. I have my company idea. It's called Grey Goo, and it's a 3D printer that only makes copies of itself. It'll print out 3D printers just like itself.
It's a von Neumann
machine. Uses whatever
machine.
Materials are around. And I just can't get anybody to give me any money on that one. It's just it's nanotech. It's so hot. It's 3D printing, but.
It's the end of all things. MakerBot's got their new stuff out. What is and they've got like a small one, a medium one, and a big mm-hmm. one. And I mean, basically, isn't like $3,000, $5,000, and $10,000?
It's not that much. No, I think I know we're not supposed to talk prices on the air that much, but they've got one that's like a, you know, like lower part of $1,000, and they've got one that's around $2,000 or $2,500. And the main thing you add there is you add multiple extruders to where you can do multiple colors and be printing three things at once. You can get really cool, like, interlocking parts and multicolored things.
And just to be clear, these are the turnkey ones. These are like, I don't want to build this. I just want to take this out of the box and go.
Yeah, you literally pull off some plastic, you plug the stuff in, and it powers up. It walks you through little screens that tell you how to calibrate everything, and it walks you through, and you're ready to go. It does a test print, and you're out of the box. You're good to go. The first thing I started doing with mine was printing different printer parts to, like, you know, make it better.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Because that's the thing. There were some deficits, but again, this was a while ago. Now the kit's out now. I think they've ironed most of the bugs out, but you're still paying a lot of money.
The one that I had the updated extruder and everything right out of the box. I mean, and compare that to like a what's the company, the PrinterBot guys, where you can just order parts, and it's much cheaper, but... Then you're assembling it yourself. But to some people, that's all part of the fun. They want to build it.
Well, that's the thing. That's kind of, you know, makes me scratch my head every once in a while. I was like, you know, the people that are getting this is definitely aimed at hobbyists that make things. So unless you just really want to get right out of the box and not have to worry about it, it's like, why would you drop so much money on having someone make something for you when you're getting this to be able to make
it? And you can make it yourself. And with some of the...
It's a factor of 10, the price savings, if you just do it yourself.
And those DIY ones, you've got the opportunity when you get in there to be like, well, I want to use this Teflon thread instead of this stupid string. And I want to use this special silicone lubricant to make the, you know, the bar move back and forth.
Or you can do
better.
Some crazy stuff. The one thing you really can't do with the commercial rigs is that the 3D printers, they all work on three axes, right? You've got the X and the Y, which is... making your traditional 2D stuff. And then your Z is what goes higher, the tall. And that's the cheapest thing to make bigger, is because you just keep printing up and up and up and up. Jay saw some of those a couple of years ago, where these guys out of San Francisco, the San Francisco makerspace, they're just like, you know, we're doing a foot by a foot on the X and Y, but that Z, we're doing like, it was taller than me. That had to be 7 feet
you
tall.
You could print like a yard of beer cup.
They were doing really, really cool, like sculpture, you know, modern art kind of intricate.
Yeah, like floor balls, you know, made out of plastic.
That's totally cool.
Yeah, they were really... There's some really cool stuff.
Or yard glass.
I think if you're at home going, oh, you know, well, this 3D printing thing, what, you know, what does that mean to me?
Micro Center has a few machines out, right?
I think the thing that's going to happen for the just average person,
where you see
a difference is, if you look at 3D printing, the thing that I see with it is it's just like, it's a lot like regular printing was, which is 30 years ago, you had to go someplace or know somebody to print, or you know, there was your crappy home thread one. But to get like a really good laser printer, a color laser type thing, I think that the model of 3D printing is where, and it may be decades before we get there, but where the majority of things that are made will start being produced 3D printer style, as opposed to the way that the industrial style that we do now.
Yeah, I think like instead of retooling an entire factory for things, maybe the form will be like much more like, you know, additive printing, or maybe it's like milling and stuff like that. I also think that this is where I get into it. Like, I would really love to have a 3D printer that does like metals and does things like that. But once you get into that specialized kind of thing, I think that's where places like Amazon, or like maybe that's how Kinko's stays relevant and stays alive, where they have the really big stuff. You go down there, you do it, or you know, you mail them your files, and then they have a drone drop it off to you. You know, 45
minutes. Think about things like auto parts or those kinds of things.
Jay Leno's been doing that too. Yeah,
they warehouse huge quantities. That's the peak of industrial, right? And if you've got an old car, especially if it's not one that's super popular, you run up against where there's parts that are not made for it. And now
that's exactly what NASA's doing right now. When I was out at Marshall last year looking at their F1 rocket engine resurrection efforts that they were in the process of doing, they were remanufacturing F1 engine components. This is a rocket engine built by Rocketdyne in the 60s. It's been out of production and storage. They were manufacturing replacement components using what do they call it? They had a specific process that they were using, but it was basically a metal-based 3D printing. Rather than going through a milling process to recreate these components, because they didn't have to make thousands of them, they needed like, you know, two. So they could use this metal deposition 3D printing. It was like a sintering thing. I don't remember exactly what it was, but they have a metal process for 3D printing they were using to gen up components very quickly, rather than having to send off and arrange a mill and, you know, get a chunk of aluminum and fine it down and all that. It was really cool.
One of the
things that struck me with the whole 3D printing thing was, I had a friend I was mentioning on Twitter, he had gotten a 3D printer, and there was some situation where he needed a wrench, a certain size wrench, to be able to turn a bolt, then he didn't have a wrench. And he just printed one. He went online, found the specs for making a wrench, and printed a wrench, and was able to fix this thing, you know.
Yeah, and it only had to work once to fix the thing.
Right.
It wasn't like he needed it as a lifetime, you know.
Right.
The medical science is where this is going to be really cool, too. And there was actually, the story
organic,
came out a few days ago.
Organic?
Well, yeah, there was actually a really cool story, like a do-it-yourself kind of saves-the-day story, where a man had a wife, of course, and they went to the optometrist. Optometrist said, hey, she has a tumor. She, you know, we don't know what her eyesight's going to do. They said that the best course is to wait. Let's wait 6 months, have her come back in, see what it does. He wasn't exactly satisfied, so he asked. They had done medical scans. So he got the medical scans from the ophthalmologist, from the optometrist, whoever was working on her eyes. He got that. He modeled it up, printed it out on a 3D printer, and then he could actually see, like, hey, here's what the tumor's doing. It's intertwining with her optical nerve. It's 6 months from now, she's not going to be able to see. He took the model around, showed the doctors, and then from that, they were able to go ahead and mock up like a surgical plan and be able to remove it. And it was a success story instead of having to actually take some guesswork. And when they open that up, that's the first time they know what the plan is. They could actually print this stuff out, practice on it, and say, here's what we're going
to
do.
And you don't have to be a super genius to decode the 2D and the 3D
You can actually see it.
On a 2D screen.
And hopefully that'll get out there to where, you know, before doctors go into a major surgery, they actually get the little playset, and it's the exact same heart that they're going to be working on. Instead of, you know, I look at that stuff, and I know there's a lot of medical imaging, but it's like, you know, that's one more set of things that they've got to decode and process to where if you make that go away, they can focus on the task at hand and not have to decode all this.
I just saw a business opportunity to turn those when they scan a pregnant woman, you could get a little 3D.
Oh, that's horrible, but that would probably sell.
It would probably sell. You could probably decorate it in a way that made it palpable. You know, palpable.
We could ship them in little tummies with, you know.
Ew.
Or maybe not. Okay.
For reference, real quick.
I just grossed myself out of being a business partner.
Well, you guys have been talking. For reference, real quick, the type of 3D printing that we do at home uses a technique called FDM, fused deposition modeling. That's melting plastic and stuff. And the NASA technique they were using is called DMLS. It stands for, if people on the podcast can play this back and look it up, direct metal laser centering, DMLS.
So it's actually fusing, and that's the hard part. Like a lot of them will use powders or different chemicals and.
Yeah.
With heat, we'll actually build the metal mm-hmm. on.
And it's kind of based on bubble jet printing, right? Or
it's all dot matrix. I mean, everything old is new again. If you look at it, that's all you're doing is you're doing a big dot matrix thing, and then you're going up a quarter millimeter, and you're doing another one. And this is with the additive printing. With what Lee's doing, it's a little bit more complicated. That's pretty much all you're doing is you're printing a piece of paper, and then you're coming up a little bit more, and you're printing mm-hmm. the next
well,
piece.
Well, I haven't
piece,
heard
and
anything
more,
recently
the
about the organic printing. Where they're starting to print.
I need to go. I need to go and see if NASA's doing anything with that out at JSC, and if they'll let me eat some of it. I would totally do that.
Like, are we talking about printing body parts? Or are we talking about printing out?
No, printing food.
Printing and food. Well, I guess we got different things.
Or printing body parts.
Edible body parts.
Stem cells.
The one that I saw was using, you know, building body parts, basically building flesh or building.
I know they built ears and they built some cartilagey kind of stuff.
Fifth Element.
They've had success with that. Yeah, there we go.
That would be cool.
There you go.
I always think of that rat that they, you know, they grafted
the rat with the ear on it. The ear rat.
What?
You don't know about the ear rat?
No, I'm kidding.
What? Okay, I get it.
But
3D printing is kind of like a 2D flip book.
Yeah.
Yes.
2D flip.
This is kind of neat. I think, I don't know if it was one of the majors, it might have been MakerBot, but someone put out a 3D printing pin, which looks like impossible to use and it just would drive you crazy. But the idea is, you know, on the 3D printers, you just have like an X and a Y, you know, axis, and you've got, you know, these little servos that move it around, these little stepper motors that move it around, and this just gives you a pin that shoots out hot plastic. What can go wrong there?
And then
it's up to you.
You become the servo.
It's up to you to trace down and do everything you need to do over and over and
it's
over.
It's interesting,
over.
Though, yeah, because there are videos of...
You can make 3D XKCD.
Now, probably what that would be good
well,
for.
Well, there's videos of people, like, videos of that pin where, you know, it's feeding the plastic in the back end, and then... they're drawing like a pyramid, like they draw a square and then they go to each corner and go up to the center and create. So it's a three, you know, it creates
I know
a three-dimensional
it's
object.
At home. Sit really still, Timmy. I'm going to draw your mustache.
Don't fall asleep. That would actually be cool. You could probably use that to go in, like, if you printed out, like, say, like figurines or something, you could go in and probably detail that up, you know, like, you know, give Jay Lee the mustache and the beard if we were to print out little Jay Lee figures. Although, I mean, even the ones we did, the scans we did, were detailed enough to where, you know, there's nothing had to be done to the mustaches or beards. That's what we need to do at the next Geek Gathering is get a Kinect hooked up, talk to Ryan. And how long did that take? Maybe 5 or 10 minutes to print out a person?
It wasn't very long at all.
It wasn't in the article that I found here, but and I don't know if Lee maybe got to see it in person, but I think
everything.
It was HP had the 3D printing that there. It mentioned in the article that system they had. They had
the sprout
that showed. It had on the desktop what almost looked like, you know, those things that the kids have with all the little nails, and you put your face up against it and it sticks up.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah.
It's something like that on the. It looked like that on the surface, and so basically it came up. I don't know if it was a visual, you know, if it was a 3D illusion or if it was really doing something that you could see in 3D, but where it was showing the 3D object coming up from the surface of the table.
I saw that.
Which would go a long ways towards being able to understand, you know, for regular humans to understand what they're doing with their model, if you can see it.
And it also did LED colors so that it could show you heights based on the color and on three-dimensional height. So they were using it to show, like, three-dimensional graphs, you know, like on paper. You know, you'll turn it at an angle so you can kind of see fake depth, third dimension. But this is like printing 3D graphs that are normally on 2D in 3D, but it's real time. Like it'll just do one, and then all of a sudden, like all these things will go up and down and move, and it's in color, and then there's your next graph.
So it means they're starting to work on the real next challenges to be able to make this something usable. And they've also figured out how to keep Moore's Law from getting us computers that just do more than we could ever want, because now it'll do 3D, and then you can take your, like, super hot rod machine you have right now and bog that sucker down. I've got three 4K displays and a 3D renderer, and I've been waiting for 17 hours for this banana to render.
Hey, look, banana right there.
But, I guess we've only got a few minutes before we need to go to break. Maybe do a few quick hits on new stuff.
Do some quick hits.
Some quick hits on new stuff, which is, I guess, like sort of buy, try, or...
buy, try, or fry.
Or get high. What?
Here's one. Google launches Chrome Remote Desktop for iOS. Chrome Remote Desktop app for iOS lets you remotely control your computer using your smartphone or tablet.
Is that out right now?
Yes, it was launched on the 12th.
Does anyone have that installed?
Well,
like, not invasive, but does it glom on to every application like it does on the Android?
Does it require Chrome to be running or something?
Yeah, I mean,
what's the Chrome part for?
While the app can be useful for remotely accessing your computer from your iPhone or iPad, it can also be used to give a friend temporary access to your desktop. On each of your computers, set up remote access using the Chrome Remote Desktop app. On your iOS device, open the app and tap on any of your online computers to connect.
So it's a Google clone of functionality that's in a lot of operating systems by default, or that there's already applications that exist that do that people are bought into.
Kinda, but it ties it into the Chromecast, yeah. And there's nothing absolutely what could possibly go wrong with letting your browser control your entire computer and operating system.
Absolutely not. No, I'm all about
it's fine.
I'm all about that.
So thought that one was interesting. And then let's see. This is something that's a quiet moving forward, but I think it's a good thing. Finally now there's starting to be some ultra fast solid state drive USB 3.0 sticks. So instead of, because now that's the thing I've noticed of late is that I've got some like Thunderbolt external drives in that. So you hook stuff up and you move to it and it's lightning fast. Then you put a thumb drive in and it's
not.
2 minutes left.
And finally on new stuff.
I now have Chrome Remote Desktop installed on my iOS device.
Ooh. So if you open up like another app, does it give you the little option to cast to?
Can you just randomly control people's computers?
I think it's tied to your Google account.
It is tied to your Google account. I just installed it.
So it knows who you are.
No computers registered. Okay, so I have to. Now, what's the app for the computer that you have to install?
There's a Chrome Remote Desktop,
which is a plug-in.
It's a plug-in to the Chrome browser.
The Chrome browser, so I'm going to add that.
God, I hate all
okay,
of this.
Okay, well, this
I
is
hate
fun.
All of this.
We can probably talk, some of this we can do over the break and then talk about after Barrett time, or if there's not a Barrett time, some other stuff.
Authorized to use Chrome Remote Desktop, you must grant extended access permissions to your computer. You only have to do this once. We'll never mention it
once
again.
Once is all it takes.
We can talk about some more new
Chrome
stuff.
Chrome Remote Desktop would like to know who you are on Google.
Chrome Remote Desktop should go jump in a lake.
Really?
Do you hate Chrome in general or just everything? Are you strict staunch Safari user?
The unified identity component tying it to a Google account just literally makes my butt clench.
That's okay. It'll loosen up.
So you got a few minutes to loosen up.
There's an app for that.
Google unclench has been announced.
All right.
It's beta. It's going to hurt.
All right, well, you're listening to Technology Bites here. I'm Jay Lee.
I'm Peter Hughes.
I'm Flicted.
I'm Barrett.
I'm Lee.
And he's
Groovehouse.
We'll be back after these messages.
Three sad facts.
All over the world, more than 80% of forest cover has been lost to deforestation. Topsoil is lost much faster than it's being created, and a half of all species are threatened with extinction, mainly by industrial activity. Until now, for the past 300 million years, about one species was going extinct every 4 years. But now, scientists see one species go extinct every 15 minutes. This environmental destruction can only be changed when you act. Deep Green Resistance says standing up and speaking out is the only hope for our planet. To learn more, visit deepgreenresistance.org. This is 90.1 KPFT Houston.
You're listening to 90.1 FM KPFT Houston.
Usted trabaja duro por su dinero y cuando usted invierte es natural que tenga ciertas demandas. Usted quiere asegurarse que su dinero se administre responsablemente y espere ver lo que invirtió crezca algo que traerá beneficios en lo largo para usted y su familia. Invirtiendo en KPFT le regresa cada vez que escucha. No importa si es por la música o noticias o por la información de lo que pase aquí en el Costo del Golfo. KPFT ha estado transmitiendo desde el 1970 y ha crecido muy cerca a la comunidad que sirve. Por favor, renueve su membresía o haga su primer contribución ahora con una llamada que solo toma 2 minutos. Llame a 713-526-4000, extensión 314, o puede visitarnos en nuestra página kpft.org. Muchísimas gracias. Esto es KPFT Houston.
Niagara Falls. Slowly I turned. Back to Technology Bites.
For English, press 1. That'll only make sense to people who are listening here locally. Okay, well, so do we have a Barrett time?
Unfortunately, no. Everyone's going to make me say no and do the shameful thing. Things should be regular, although we've got a fundraiser next week, so.
Yes. So, well, I've...
It's actually a fairly slow week. Nothing's going on.
Some new stuff, and then I've got some science news that should be Barrett time.
Science!
When this baby hits 88 miles an hour, you're going to see some serious
Isn't that
science.
This year? Is that this year? Or did
yes.
that already pass?
2015. Yes. 2015 is Back to the Future 2, and Nike said they're going to release the self-lacing shoes. They said they're going to
so
do it.
So finally our lazy
they
dreams
said they're
have been...
going to do
I'm
it.
I'm still waiting for the 80s cafe with Reagan and
I
Michael
would,
Jackson
I
fighting.
Would go, you know what? When that movie came out, that was dumb, I guess. But now I would totally go eat at the Cafe 80s. That would be awesome.
All right, well, at the risk of losing all of Lee's respect, there's my Mac lap desktop.
Now what you need to do is get a phone remote control app installed, and then you can get, like, the infinite hall of mirrors.
So what Jay is doing,
recursive
Jay,
remote control.
Jay's great, big, huge, beefy iPhone 6 is controlling his... This is awesome because it's Google technology taking over, you know, two matched Mac devices, but mm-hmm. he's controlling his MacBook Air's desktop from his iPhone
no,
6.
No, his computer at home, right?
No, I'm controlling
this one. Here in the
yeah.
studio.
No, because I have to install a client on the computer.
I would say one thing that may speak for a positive on the Google Remote Desktop is the fact that it took so little time that over a break like that.
Oh yeah,
it works really quickly. You don't have to worry about NAT. You know, like we've all struggled, I'm sure, in this room with stuff like, you know, GoToMeeting and WebEx and just all the iterations that we've had to jump through. And still, you know, it's like I'll have 10 minutes to get on a meeting and they'll ship out some weird web install client. I'll do it. I'm like, first of all, I'm on a Mac or I'm on Linux. It's like you sent me a Windows MSI package. What am I going to do? But yeah, that is so simple. It just kind of works. So I wish how all installable software was like that.
It's kind of nice because of the real estate on the iPhone 6 Plus.
Yeah.
Because Apple doesn't really offer those kinds of capabilities.
They used to. They used to have a lot of really neat stuff built in, but they pulled back.
I've
never had the phone.
Although,
yeah.
see, they sort of buried the app because it's like, I do enough stuff with Mac servers that I want it on my bar. I want to be able mm-hmm. to call it up and call up my – and unless the easiest thing, of course, is you do the connect – I mean, they put it in the Finder. You can connect a server.
Yeah.
Siri, move my mouse to the left.
It's Google,
okay,
Jay. Yes,
but,
Jay.
But, you know, the iPhone, it's kind of like an iPhone 6 Plus could do, you know, there's some basic there's some things that I run remotely that, you know, once a week that would be real nice to just be able to pull out the old iPhone 6 and do it. But on other new stuff, I saved the cooler stuff. Obviously, you know, it starts a lot lamer and gets to the cooler
stuff. You first hour listeners, you're just not worthwhile.
No, it's just in order.
Now we're talking to the true fans.
I want to get to the stuff that it's either going to be the best or the worst, because either way you get conversation out of it, but you get to hear what we think. So, yeah, sometimes the lamest technology has the best conversations. No, this one's kind of cool. The, if you're wanting to be a cord cutter, Dish Network is kind of trying to jump ahead. They've launched a thing called Sling TV, and no, it's not the Sling Box. Mm-mm. What it is it's a plan where for like $20 a month, you get ESPN and a dozen other channels. Can't get if you cut the cord. You know, Hulu doesn't offer ESPN. I'm not saying this is stupid.
Dish one of the? And I should go Google this before I bring this up. Was Dish one of the companies that went after Arrow? That was doing where you could lease the over-the-air TV broadcasts and lease an antenna, or were they not?
I don't think.
I think it was all the local
went after them?
Major affiliates that were doing that.
So the idea, though, as a cord cutter, the thing this is another chip in the wall on the package approach to your cable is this is the first defection of a major content company to offering you access to
sports. Are they offering it over Dish TV?
That's their focus right now.
Are they offering it over the internet?
Over the internet. You do.
So it's a Dish TV website. And do you pick the channels, or is it a fixed package?
It's right now they're offering a particular package. I think they're going to be looking to add more channels to it.
Is it like 11 options. Spanish stations
no.
and ESPN?
No, it's not. You know what? Even if it was, it's got people HGTV. Would do it just for ESPN. They really would.
Yeah, Monday Night Football.
Absolutely. That's keeping my dad and, I'm sure, just tons of other people away from canceling cable
slash
satellite.
It makes sense that a satellite company would basically say, hey, you know, we're not losing anything because we don't have any wire with it anyway. We have this content. We can put it out over the internet just because they're doing that anyway. Most of them have a watch TV on your other screens kind of thing at home.
Right.
And so it's not a big leap to.
Not for sports. Sports is
See,
that.
I
sports
like
is
the
that
idea of like of pay, like the idea of pay per views, but they always charge so much. Like, I wish I could just say, you know what, I want to watch this football game, or I want to watch this soccer game, and it's like, you know, you pay $5 or something, and you get to watch the game. Like, that would be reasonable.
They need sort of the equivalent of the iTunes, like iTunes did with music, where it's like for $1 you watch the game, and you're okay.
Well, Microsoft, I think the issue they've got now is they can't tell if like you've got an entire room packed, and you've got a party, and it's a bar, and you've got 100 people in there watching it, versus if one person is on his couch in the dark watching it. But just wait till they get the Xbox Kinect hooked up. That's what they actually want to do. They want to be able to monitor the living room, see how many people are watching something, and then charge you accordingly. I think Amazon is talking about that, and a lot of companies are looking at that, and they think that's awesome. But again, man, that's eyes in your living room.
There's also still tremendous money made from traditional, like, geographic-based distribution deals. That's one of the things that's always stood in the way of doing, you know, an a la carte or a per game or
the franchises have all these agreements.
Yeah,
right?
there's this massive, like, just draconian web of distribution agreements chopping the world up into territories and talking about, you know, you can't just have one network's worth of games or one sport's worth of games or one division game or just single games. We have to sell the broadcast rights for 14 different types of mediums, for these packages, for these regions. It's just because there's just so much money tied up in chopping up how the distribution is done. It's just massively lucrative to control the distribution channels and to make as many different crazy deals out of it as they
can.
Some of this is the first little drip. Drip, drip.
Not that I would ever suggest this because it's not legal, but you know, if you go to, I won't mention any names, but if you go to certain sites that replay sports, and use an ad blocker to keep from getting infected.
Are you advocating sailing the high seas?
It's really cool that you can watch live streams of, for example, like Bundesliga 2. Like the German like second tier soccer games that you would never see on any TV station locally or even really on cable. Or, you know, one time I watched I don't even know, it was like Middle Eastern soccer game of like some like,
I think it's football,
low level
league. You're talking about football, not soccer at that point.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was the one where the dog
was
ran
really
off
interesting.
With the goat's head they were using as a ball.
Well, it was like pretty much in sand, and it was like the equivalent of like, you know, like a 2A Texas football stadium.
Well, that's kind of awesome, you know? Though.
And it was cool.
You don't normally get to watch that.
That's yeah. the power of the internet. And then sort of on the final new stuff thing, so the rumors are getting stronger that the production of a 12-inch MacBook Air with a Retina screen is coming. And given basically, you know, yeah, okay, you can smack me and call me an Apple fanboy or any of that stuff. The thing is, the MacBook Air, MacBook Air leads the way on what you're going to see going forward on design, and so it's worth keeping a close eye, especially since I keep an eye on it myself to see if I would be interested in such a thing.
And they're getting rid of all the connectors.
The rumor is that there's one connector. There's a new something about like the USB 3. There's a new type of connector that can do power.
Well, somebody said the only connector they could see that would work would be USB 3. But the thing is, if you wanted to have anything connected other than power, you're going to have a USB 3 hub or something. Yeah.
Or else the power thing that you plug into it will have to have some slots in it or whatever.
And plus, they've invested a lot in Thunderbolt.
The thing is, though, at home, or other than, you know, when you're out on the road with a MacBook Air, how often do you hook other stuff up to it? And that's part of why, because there were a lot of people who were skeptical when they dropped the optical drive, too. But I don't know.
Well, if you want to configure your Internet of Things, you're going to have to hook up to something to program them.
The thing that's interesting is expected that the new Air will be about the size of the current 11-inch model, and they think it may just replace that and leave the 13-inch intact.
Do they have a release date? Is that coming out soon?
Well, it's going into production, so that would be first quarter this year that they would be thinking about it. It's got the more recent processor. Is it Broadwell? There's Haswell and then Broadwell.
Broadwell.
The interesting thing with that is, just sort of in other news that relates, is Dell has announced that they're going to skip Broadwell and go to now I've forgotten what it's called. It's like Skylane or something like that.
Skynet.
And
yes,
well, no, it's like Skylane because apparently it'll allow like wireless charging and there's some other stuff with it.
Skylake.
That's it. And Dell is going to skip right to that. They're talking about 15-hour battery life with a fanless device.
Speaking of, my laptop's melting down right now. I was looking at Pete.
You hear the fan?
That's my fan. Yeah, I'm running a browser.
Yeah, we're all in here being like, holding our laptops up. Is that my fan?
I'm pointing at Pete because my headphones are over my left ear, so I was like, dude, this laptop is just...
I was using Chrome Remote Desktop. What's the name of your computer?
Enable fan.
So real quick, before we leave the USB 3 thing, USB 3.1, the most interesting thing we did when we wrote this up, this was the most clicked on thing that we did at CES. I don't think I'm giving anything away. I'm not getting into any traffic stats or anything, but our hands on with the USB 3.1 Type C connector was the thing that our readers were the absolute most interested in. It's if you haven't seen it, it solves the problem.
USB. It either way,
It is a up or down.
It's
reversible
light. It's like lightning,
so,
right? Where
so
it's
it means
flippable.
That you'll only have to try twice.
Yeah, because it's a well-known fact that USB connectors are three-sided. Like, existing USB connectors, there's the wrong way, and then you pull it out and flip it, and it's the wrong way.
They're entangled with Schrodinger's cat
somehow. And you flip it again, and the third time is the right way. Well, fortunately, we're going to, with USB 3.1, or USB Type-C is the connector type. It's smaller. It's about the size of like a it's halfway between a mini and a micro USB.
Looks a little bit more sturdy too. Cause, I mean, overuse, yeah. I've worn out, you know, a handful of connectors.
It sounds a lot more like the Thunderbolt connectors that go on like.
Yeah, it's about the same size as that.
Thunderbolt or Lightning?
Lightning. It's about the same size as a Lightning plug.
No, it's not magnetic. That just it's a funky shot of what you're looking at, right?
Yeah, it's just got a ring around it and it just goes in. It's like up here is the it's got
so
it's
looks
got
like
depth.
The way they've done it. Probably the jacket of that is probably like maybe conducting or something. And then it's got a row of pins in the center. And then I'm assuming that you flip them either way and they
that's what Lightning does.
Yeah,
Lightning's got same pins on
well,
opposite
sides. So the
side.
Idea is this 12-inch MacBook Air will have a Retina screen so that it'll have the same number of pixels as or better than the 13-inch, but it'll be in the smaller package. which for portability, you know, depending on what kind of user you are, because I didn't do the 11 because I didn't like the fact that if you tried to use it, I mean, it's not very big, and so you're going to be scrolling a lot on every web page.
11-inch iPhone, that's coming.
Right, well, there's also, though, there's the rumors of what the 12-inch iPad, the mega iPad. I haven't heard anything new on that, but there's been the rumors about the giga iPad or whatever you want to call it.
But at some point, that becomes an Air. I mean, with the detachable keyboard, those two are getting too close together.
They'll just call it the AirPad.
That's what they've tried to do. That's the Yoga, except it runs a Mac operating
system instead of AirPad has more ports.
We'll keep an eye on that one. I certainly, just personally, would be interested in watching that one because my MacBook Air is starting to get a little long in the tooth. And I would love to have a device where I would have zero worries leaving in the morning and knowing if I was going to come and do the show and not having to bring a power brick with me and know that I'd have enough juice to get all the way.
Well, Haswell MacBook Air, the existing Haswell, I think the new Rev is Haswell.
Yeah, the current
Haswell. Yeah, it is current. Those still have like ludicrous battery hour, but with the newer vision going to Skylake, you'd be talking about like double ludicrous battery life.
so that'll be fun. And you know, now so that's all the new stuff. Science thing, quickie science stuff. I probably should have just like given these links to Barrett and let him do them. But
Barrett knows.
I will pull
science.
My own weight starting next show.
Here's this is one of those where you know maybe you thought about it at random about you know the trip, the lunar stuff, and all that. You know the stuff that we left behind when we went to the moon. Well, one of the things
I know
is
where this is going.
There are little bags of poop and vomit on
oh, someone
the surface
got ill?
Of the moon. Yeah, apparently they said that there's, they don't know how many pounds of it, not to mention other excrement as well as boring old stuff like tools, golf balls, photographs, cameras, a gold-plated telescope, so that could be valuable, and random symbolic objects. That you know the flags that we left?
They're white
Those
now.
Are white now, yeah.
Well, you know, that's
They're
if
bleached
you believe
white
we landed
from the sun.
On the moon. They can just harvest and clean all that stuff off the set.
So
that does sound like a Hollywood set, doesn't it?
One of the final,
excrement check.
One of the final steps as for each of the six lunar landings. One of the final steps before, as on the last surface EVA, as the astronauts were reentering the limb, one of the last steps was to jettison all of the waste. And it wasn't just like bags of poop, although yes, bags of poop were included. It was basically everything. So all of the Pliss backpacks that the astronauts wore, those are all still up there also.
Well, essentially, you don't want to pay. Well, first off, they wanted to bring back as much moon rock and stuff to analyze as possible.
Yes, because that stuff, I mean, that's literally priceless.
All the empty food tubes.
And so leaving the trash, you know, the thing is, it's sort of like there's humanity's real mark on the universe. How can you tell if we've been somewhere? Well, there's going to be bags of poop.
Well, you know, and like you said, there's reasons for it. Like literally every ounce of weight you shed is an ounce of additional, you know, sample that you can bring back. That's more dust, more rocks, more priceless.
That's the kind of
stuff.
Attention to detail that a moon landing conspiracy needs to continue. You know, why would we make this up?
That's what we've got to look forward to in space travel. Wasn't there a planet in The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy where you were weighed when you came into the planet and you were weighed when you left and you were expected to leave however much you ate behind, because there was so much tourism to this planet, people were eating stuff and then just taking off. Planet was vanishing.
Taking away the resources.
Yeah. Well, and then the truck stop planets probably have the exact opposite problem. So that's
scary. Sort of related to the stuff we left on the moon, but on a different planet is apparently they found. You know, there was the Beagle 2, the
Beagle.
European one where they, you know, had that problem about translating between. I think that was the one where the metric system
and
in
yeah
English,
standard.
Supposedly they think they found the wreckage on Mars. So, I mean, it did actually get there. It'll just be sort of sad to watch like one of if our rover like just sort of rolls over the wreckage. Of the And, finally on science stuff, SpaceX landed its rocket on a barge.
Well,
but
landed in finger
but
quotes.
A reusable Falcon 9 still far off. Yeah. They said, Elon Musk said, "Close, but no cigar."
They kind of drove it into the barge more than landed
well,
it.
Well, it wasn't a complete disaster. The first stage didn't disintegrate or crash into the water, but it landed too hard on the platform and broke when it hit the ground, according to some reports. So they're going to work on that. This is their first try, though.
They said that they already knew, or Elon read a thing that said that they already knew that What happened was it ran out of hydraulic fluid right before it landed, and so they had already planned for the next one to have 50% more hydraulic fluid, so that shouldn't be a problem next time.
Most people would guess the first one when you land on a barge is you're going to have a rocket-shaped hole in the middle of the barge. That's if you got it right enough that the rocket
I'm saying you're going to be like, right. The first shot, you're going to be half a mile.
That sounds like to me,
Yeah, the fact that they got to the barge and hit the barge is pretty impressive.
Missed it by that much.
B7. Right on there.
So,
you sank my barge.
So, anyway, so, that's certainly interesting progress. The thing is, we're getting to the kind of cool tech approach to space, and that's one of the things that I think is kind of awesome. Is, before it was the Americans, we were just trying to do the minimum we could to get there, to make it. And the Russians were doing the, brute force, brutal,
we will kill as many people as we must. Dogs, monkeys.
We blow the bomb up 3 feet off the ground and the rocket then flutters to the ground. But, and now we're getting into the kind of, higher end, clever stuff. And real competition between multiple players to do. Although, boy, SpaceX seems to have really leaped out ahead.
SpaceX is kind of the standard carrier, but they've opened the door for a lot of other ones. I went and talked to a Texas company just a couple of months ago called Firefly Aerospace. They're out in the Austin area.
I like the name.
They have an not named after the show.
Oh, okay. Well then,
but they have what's called an autogenous. They have a self-pressurized rocket. It's ammonia fueled and it uses a linear aerospike engine, or not a linear, they uses a plug aerospike engine. It's really cool. They're going to make smaller rockets and launch tons of little micro satellites up. And the way they explained their business to me was that there's not necessarily, if you built a bunch of giant rockets, you'd have a hard time finding enough payloads to keep those giant rockets flying. But if you build a bunch of smaller rockets, there are just thousands of potential customers who would pay to have little bitty CubeSats and fill a whole cargo hold up
with
little bitty
satellites. And on summer nights, when you look up in the sky, all those little satellites re-entering the atmosphere will look like fireflies.
That was kind of the genesis of their name. But yeah, that's a Texas company. They're just right down the road outside of Austin. And there's tons of other ones, Bezos and Blue Origin. There's Bigelow. There's SpaceX, of course, and many others. And then a lot of the big names are getting their feet in commercial space, too. Boeing's got their commercial space thing. And I know others do, too. Tons of them do. It's neat. It's neat to see all the new space stuff, and it's also neat to see the old space vanguards. Because commercial space is kind of a misnomer, because space has always been a commercial activity. NASA doesn't make rockets.
Right.
All the North Americans, the Boeings, the Lockheeds, all those companies have been the companies that since the beginning of the space age have been making all of this stuff. But they've all been doing it under, it's all been government contract driven and inefficient and blah, 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 blah. But as all these new space companies get spun up with SpaceX being that standard bearer, even the old space big name companies are also getting to play in the new space arena. And yeah, it's really neat. I like it. I think it's cool.
There's in contrast to broadband, there's the legitimate power of competition.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Where even the big elephants that got here the old fashioned government contract way are having to learn how to dance with the little upstart guys. Although mm-hmm. Elon Musk, it's like, is that guy, he's a fictional character. I mean, he's the closest thing to Tony Stark that we have
walking around.
I want to go to space and I want to have electric cars, so I'm going to form two different companies that neither one should have a chance in hell of even getting anything rolling down the street or off the ground. And oh, well, they'll both be.
But first, I'm going to take a nap
successful.
And build a Hyperloop. Be back in five.
Yeah, you gotta love him. And he's like, Elon Musk would be, is the good, he's like the Tony Stark, yeah. And then probably on the insane billionaire side, the billionaire supervision, there's or supervillain, there's Larry Ellison is probably the tech evil billionaire.
Although he's not good enough, he's not evil enough lately to be to really get a lot of attention. I mean, he bought that island in Hawaii.
Have you used Oracle software lately? He's evil enough, believe me.
There have been some ugly exploits.
What does that leave Richard Branson?
Richard Branson is, I guess he's like Batman, but he's like...
He's stoner Batman.
I think, yes. He actually, he's an animatronic. Sir Richard has been gone for forever. He's, yeah, Virgin Galactic lives on in him.
He used his money to build a robot analog.
He is the singularity, yeah.
Of himself.
We've got a correction from the IRC channel. So it looks like the Metric Imperial problem afflicted a probe made by Lockheed. We were off.
I'm pretty sure it was U.S. Europe wouldn't have the conversion problem.
Beagle 2
was
the one that was supposed to roll,
English.
And it just didn't.
Well, Beagle 2 lost comms on entry, and they had no idea what happened to it. So that wasn't the mating of the two different, according to KD-5.
To KD-5. Well, and I would, especially from him, I would take that as very little.
Another correction, fiber oligoptical is actually Comcast's new name for the fiber optical offering. So you were right on the spot. Yeah, that's
fiber oligoptical.
Them and Cox, yeah, they're teaming up.
Gloppoloptical.
Oligarchy, what?
Huh? I can't do it again.
Ugly optical. Ogle 10 gigabits of gobble glug.
Is there spokesman Mr. Magoo?
Onomata IP address.
Let's go with yes. Yes on that one.
There's plenty of the science thing, that's it's kind of cool as we've started to do this, trying to put some of that in the show. It's amazing how much science news there is floating around.
I was talking about electric cars. I was going to say, before we leave the electric car subject, so I'm going to actually drive out to Austin tomorrow because Elon Musk, speak of the devil, is headlining the 10th annual Texas Transportation Forum in Austin.
Even though they can't sell you a car here because...
Yes,
they're working on that.
But I'm going to get to drive out there tomorrow and spend probably about 10 minutes behind the wheel of one of their new P85D Plus, the dual drive, 0-60 in 3 second, like crazy
the
Model
geek
S's.
Dream car.
Yes, actually, I'm totally excited.
You don't even have to be a geek to have it be a dream car. If you describe it to a motorhead, would not turn it down.
Well, first they'll poo poo at it, but then you talk about it for about 5 minutes, and then they're like,
That's the thing. I think Tesla could be profitable right now if they weren't fighting legislation. I think they're dumping all their money, all the profits back into R&D. They're already working on the third version of the car, and they've got sites. I think they said a million cars by 2020.
Well, they're working. One of their big things that's a big target is an affordable kind of mid-range.
It'll be the 35 to 40,000.
Yeah, the Model
sedan.
3, the Tesla
and
Model 3.
Talking about competition being a good thing, even for the big entrenched players, GM announced the Chevy Bolt. The Volt is the gas hybrid one that has a gas motor that generates power to charge the battery, so you can go whatever distance if you fill the gas tank. The Bolt is smaller. It's an electric car that's going to cost, it sounds like MSRP is going to be $35,000.
And that's
and it'll
prior
go 200
to
miles, 200 miles on a charge.
Yep.
So why would they call the Volt the not electric one?
Because the Volt has a gasoline engine also.
The Volt goes like 30 miles on a battery and then takes
naming
over with the
order.
Gas.
They messed up. They didn't
now,
go far enough.
So interesting thing about Elon Musk. So there was a write up on talking about the price of the Model 3. There was a quick write up on Jalopnik that I caught this morning that had some snippets of Elon Musk talking about. It was an interview. I believe it was out of an interview with the Wall Street Journal. No, it was Musk's onstage interview at the Automotive News World Congress relatively recently. There's this beautiful quote of him in here. And he says, wait a minute. Oh, where'd it go? Did they pull the quote? Well, they might have pulled the quote because it was so awesome.
Well, it is that the Volt is, they're switching. The Volt is going to be pure electric. The Bolt is going to be hybrid.
Here it is. Okay, yes. When asked, do you believe Tesla has anything to learn from the Volt or from other cars on the road? Elon Musk responded, no.
But, the plus side of GM having a 200-mile range electric car. See, 70 miles, it doesn't matter how many times you tell people, most people's daily commute totals 40-some-odd miles. In Texas, nobody's commute is 40 miles round trip. I mean, unless you work at home. But, they're not going to be comfortable. That's not close enough to the range.
Well, they're thinking, yeah, they're just thinking, like, if I have to make a couple of stops, I'm going
to
run out.
If I go to the supermarket, you know, I don't want to have to keep track of if I go out after work, if I go into a restaurant,
or I'm
going
to have
to go home,
rent,
I run
rent
out of
a
juice.
Vehicle every time I want to visit 200 family.
200 miles, on the other hand, means you could be anywhere in the Houston metro,
and
go
back.
To work, go over to a restaurant. You might be able to go a couple days on. Depending on what you're doing.
Depending upon how you're driving.
And if you go home every night, you basically you plug it in, it doesn't matter.
That's
what like
I found
phone.
When I had, because they loaned me, when I did my Model S review, I kept one from Thursday to Sunday, and I put about 700 miles on it. And my takeaway was that effectively, if your round trip, wherever you're going, or if your daily drive is less than the range of the car, then the car's range is effectively unlimited. Because you get up in the morning, you unplug it, you drive it, and then when you get home, you plug it in, and then it charges overnight, and the next day it's ready to go again, unlimited. So, I mean, as long as you don't drive...
Or forget to plug it in.
Or forget to plug it in, then you're in trouble. But, yeah, and I mean, I got... So the Model S has a rated range. The version I had was like 260 was the rated range under perfect driving conditions, blah, blah, blah. The way I drove it, which was... Not, which because it was the fully upgraded one with the 416 horsepower equivalent, the way I drove it, I still got probably 180, 190 miles on a full charge, which was, and that was, you know, tear-assing around town at faster than I should
have. You drove it like a golf cart at the country club?
I drove it, yeah.
Where to take off, it's floor, put to the floor
yeah.
every time?
Yeah, pretty much, which they told me to do. But yeah, I mean they're great vehicles. They're fun cars. I mean, you know, so I'm looking forward to driving the super duper double.
See,
motor one
of those I could drive from. I could come here
and there's a supercharger.
I just have to leave
between.
Early enough to stop in. I think it's Columbus.
It's in Columbus.
Has a supercharger. I would just need to stop for 20 minutes there
yep.
on the way in, and then
man,
probably
and I tell
on
you
way
what,
back.
I've got pictures of the supercharger. How much current it dumps into that car when we plugged it in. And
so if there's any eccentric shocking. Millionaires out there who wanted to make it really easy for me to come in for the show every week,
when I plugged that Model S into the supercharger and snapped a picture of that thing charging up, it was dumping 313 amps and 368 volts, or 368 volts at 313 amps during the initial
volts
charge.
Or bolts?
This one wow. was volts, 368 volts at 313 amps. And if anybody out there
trademark
is
study.
An electrical kind of person, you know that is just a – that was at the initial – because the way the superchargers work is you plug it in, and real quickly it dumps like 100 miles of range in. And then it tapers off so the battery doesn't explode like a bomb and charge it. And at the end of the charge, it was drawing like about 400 volts at 20 amps. But, I mean, still, just
how
that –
how many cars can charge at one of these things at a time?
It depends, but it's like the Columbus one I think has six bays. But I mean, it's still not. It's
and
just
how
not,
many? Yeah, and it's like how many Tesla owners are going to be traveling I-10
every time
every
I've
day?
Done that. I've
and
done
it's
the
only
trip.
20 minutes, right?
It's only 20 minutes or so. But every time I've done the Houston Austin trip, because it's right there. It's like when you get off. It's right before on 10 when you're going to take the thing to go to 75 north to go to Austin. It's right before that. And every time I drive by, I look because you can see it. It's in the parking lot of a hotel. I forget what the hotel is. But you can look over and you can see the little station. There's never anybody there. So, I mean, it would be wide open anytime.
So eventually
going to
change, though. And that I know that a lot
you
of the...
You get free access to that if you own one?
Yeah.
Basically, if you have anything that can plug that
if
it
you
can
buy,
plug into
so
it.
I think it's optional on the low-end one. And then on the medium and the high-end one, it's included in the price. But, yeah, you get free access to it. You just roll up, charge your car with their special connector. And they do it because they bypass the car's onboard... charging circuitry, and they have they explained it to me
battery.
When I was there. Yeah, they have like the big inverters in the charging station itself, and so when you plug it in, it doesn't use the car's inbuilt circuitry. It dumps DC. It just shoves it like a waterfall right into the battery,
like landing a rocket on a barge.
Yeah, but yeah, just a tremendous amount of current. And I can only imagine if you got six cars lined up, how much juice that
people's
that
hair standing on.
Down.
Well, the electrical grid. A lot of the providers are looking at like we've got to do something because if this cat takes off in 5 or 10 years, we're not going to be completely ready for it for that kind of drain. Because I mean, the power still has to come from somewhere, so it is alternative energy. It's electricity, but a lot of it Texas is good about wind. I know we've got a lot of wind generated. We've got some other generations, but for the most part, it's still coal in most parts of the U.S. Yep. I mean, that's even though you're an electric vehicle,
although
electricity has to come
night,
from somewhere.
Mostly, I mean, it's basically the one of the positives on an electric car is you're plugging it in and you're taking juice off when the system isn't under load.
Did you guys see the thing about, and I'm gonna get this wrong because I didn't read up on it for the show, I just remembered it now, about as electric cars become more common, especially high capacity long range electric cars, the rolling like aggregated electric car fleet will represent like a potential like viable energy reserve. Mm-hmm. There'll be this tremendous amount of potential energy stored in all these cars' batteries rolling around.
They're talking about a lot of an electric car with a big battery as sort of the backup power for your house, so you can have solar or whatever, or if something there's an interruption, it could take power from the car and power your home.
Because these things have, I mean, the 60 to 85 kilowatt hour just gigantor batteries in them, and that's only going to get bigger as these cars get bigger and more advanced, too. That energy density is going to go up. Because that's the key to range. The denser the battery, the longer the car goes.
See, and I'll give you a sign of you can see what a non-competitive industry looks like, is when something disruptive like that comes around, they go running to the legislature and throwing around money to get laws to stop people from being able to use stuff.
Yeah.
So like the big power companies, instead of embracing the idea that, solar is one way to improve their situation, instead they're busy, like in Florida, they've been busy getting rid of any subsidies for
and
solar.
And they've started to describe people who put solar cells as people that are freeloaders that are cheating everybody else, stealing from them.
They're takers. They're coming in your house and taking your
because basically
electrons.
you're no longer helping to pay for the infrastructure.
You're not
that
lining
you're
our
using
pockets anymore.
And that everybody else is
problem.
Using.
But aren't a lot of those home solar cells configured such that they can feed excess energy back
they
into
can,
the
but
grid?
They...
And that's
and
the other
fight
thing
about having to
is
pay
they,
for that.
They've talked about that some of them don't pay for that anymore. There are some that will not. They don't pay
Texas
for it.
Texas is
if
still
you feed
doing
it back in, it doesn't matter.
KD5 is still doing that. I've got a few friends that they actually, it's not a lot, but they'll actually get like $15, $20 checks, $80 checks back.
Some
every
some
month
some companies won't do that anymore.
Well, you know,
or
the funny thing,
the amount you pay versus the amount they pay you to feed back in is like a significant.
You're not getting it. It's worse than like selling back
although
video games.
The thing I wonder about is don't think I wonder if they're sort of like in Texas where they went big on deregulation. The wires are separate from the electricity now. I mean, they kind of did the like
internet they deregulated
thing. So they should be able to figure out what's the fee for the wire and what's the fee for the juice should be separate things. But I guarantee you when they're talking to the legislature or whatever, that those subtle distinctions get lost.
And you know what else is we were talking about Elon Musk again. You know what else – what one of Elon Musk's ventures is? He's the chairman of the board of Solar City. The home solar power initiative.
The one that like leases you the panels.
The one
that'll
and lease
stuff.
You the panels. Not in Houston area yet. Man, I'll sign up for that in a hot minute as soon as it's available.
At some point when solar, and the deal is solar. That's the thing that people, the internet model, is versus the industrial model. Moore's law. Computers keep getting cheaper. There's always been that old saw about a car. If cars were like computers, now it'd cost you $200 and it'd go, on a teaspoon of gas, you could go 1,000 miles or whatever. That's the kind of advancement you get with computers. Well, solar is like that with Moore's law, and they are the thing that keeps happening is there keeps being the articles that say, okay, solar has almost reached cost parity with industrial scale electrical generation, cost per watt. Because remember, it used to be where it was like, 10 times or 100 times as much for solar. That's why you only had it on like your calculator.
The efficiency of the cells keep jumping too. I mean, they're jumping by like 100% every 6 months, it seems like.
And so you're coming up on where at some point it gets to where it is competitive. And you'd think, the thing you would think these big, in Texas especially, why weren't the power companies thinking 10 or 15 years ago? Well, if we put solar panels around on people's houses, if they allow us to and we give them a little discount, there's all that real estate that's just sitting there. And what does it do? It generates power at the moment when the utilities really actually need extra power. Mm-hmm. Although
that's actually one of the things you were talking about earlier, that is, if a ton of people start having cars that they plug in at night, yeah, you're offloading that tonight, but that's also when there's no generation mm-hmm. from wind or from solar or from all these other sources.
Wind still goes wind at night, doesn't it? Doesn't
but
it?
Not as much. I mean, generally wind is higher, especially where the windmills are. It's higher during the day.
Yeah, that always kind of made me scratch my head, because that shoots the whole idea, you know, that your car is going to be the, because the whole issue is you generate solar, and right now, for the most part, you really can't store that much of your house. So any excess you're going to, you know, sell off at a loss probably to the energy company. So yeah, they were saying, you know, hey, we're going to use the car battery as the storage utility for this, but
everything
if you go
comes
to work,
back to battery.
It doesn't work. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Everything comes back to battery. Like battery tech is an area that has not improved much in a long time.
Although there are a lot of people attacking
that problem. Yeah, not for lack of trying.
There's a lot of stuff that's like on the verge, like it's in the lab. They've done some stuff that's impressive, but there's still, like with graphene and
there's a lot of 5 to 10 years away stuff that's perpetually 5 to 10 years away.
Exactly. How far are lithium crystals out still?
The 200-mile electric car was a just like total fantasy, or else you had a trailer behind you full of extra batteries to make that work, and now it's a reality that Chevy, there's going to be a Chevy that does that, which kind of says something.
There's
going to be a
Chevy that does it, but it required someone to actually disrupt the market and force the hand, because there really was no real incentive for any of the traditional automakers to take that step. And I don't buy into the conspiracy that, you know, there's a light bulb that gets the last for a million years that the light bulb companies are sitting on, and there's a car that runs on water that the car companies are sitting on, because none of that makes economic sense. If those kind of advances were being hidden, they would be more valuable if they were brought out and sold and exploited.
Yeah, the oil companies don't own the water carburetor.
Right, no, that's when you break that down, that doesn't make even basic economic sense. But I think there was massive incentive for maintaining the status quo and not investing huge amounts of R&D into effective electric vehicles. And I'm glad that Musk has – I hate to keep using that word disrupt, because it's almost turning into like cloud. It's a very overused word. But I'm very happy that they've come in and disrupted that, because it's been the incentive that's been needed, it seems like, to kick off, you know – like 10 years ago, the idea of, like you said, a 200-mile electric car, the absolute fantasy. And now – I mean, all you got to do is go pay, you know, $120,000, and you can have your own.
Well, you'll be able to pay $35,000
just 6 to 12 months.
$100 tax deal.
Because the wait doesn't. This is odd. You've got a picture pulled up. Elon Musk. Maybe just we've talked about him way too much tonight. But does he kind of have a Captain Jack Harkness kind of thing going on? Doctor Who. Just a touch in this picture. Jake could probably weigh in on that.
Kind of does.
You've just been doing
and
too much.
And also kind
Musk.
Of a younger, but not as young as his heyday Jello Biafra thing going on as well.
Musk is all.
He's a cool guy. I would
Musk, which is kind of a weird way of saying man crush, I guess, now, because that's all we're talking about.
I'd hang out with Elon Musk. He seems like a cool guy. I'd love to
see
what his day-to-day is like.
I'll sit next to Will Wheaton at this bar and try a guy and Elon Musk walked up.
All we can talk about is Musk, yeah.
We should get Elon Musk on the show. Can somebody in the booth call Elon Musk, and we'll see if
we'll just toss him in your trunk tomorrow, and, you know.
Yeah, that'll be fine. I'll just clonk him
say,
on
we'll
the
let
head.
You out,
will you
one,
will
when
you see him when you go to Austin?
I have kind of a 50% commitment for 10 minutes of his time, so if he has availability and they can fit me in, I'll get to talk to him for about 10 minutes. But they're saying the PR is telling me that's 50-50 right now. So I don't know. We'll see. He'll be there. Yeah, I'll get to see him do his keynote. Right. But I may or may not get to actually talk to him for a few minutes.
He can't have that much security, can he?
Don't stand between a technology reporter.
Have you got some great Barbara Walters style questions? You only have 10 minutes with Mr. Musk. Oh, okay, if you were a marsupial, what kind
of... I would do the exact Galifianakis between two ferns approach. I think that's pretty classic.
I'd ask him if he reads Ars Technica. And then if he doesn't, I would
so
tell
him. Speaking of Ars, just this is totally divergent, but you were like pretty pro Oculus Rift, but I saw ours came out a day or two ago and said, "Hey, forget Oculus. Is it Samsung?"
Didn't say
or
forget.
One of
Oculus.
The one of the large companies is doing it right. Did you get to see that?
No, no. That's the Gear VR.
Yeah,
have which actually with that? Is that's Oculus's thing. They developed it in cooperation with Samsung. Yeah, I wrote two things on it about at CES. So what we're talking about, I know we're kind of at the bottom end of the show here. What we're talking about is it's called the Gear VR. Samsung Gear VR, and it is, when you look at it, it looks like a head-mounted display without the display. It's like the goggles, and then into the front of it, you have to clip a Samsung Galaxy Note 4. And only a Samsung Galaxy Note 4. It's specifically designed to work with that because that's got the... it's got a 2560 by 1440 display, which actually is higher res than the Oculus Rift development kit that you can currently go buy. And yeah, I sat down and I tried this out for probably about 10 minutes in a little private demo room with their PR guy there talking me through it. And it was great. And it was different from the Rift. I've got a Rift. I have a DK2 development kit 2 Rift at home that I bought out of pocket. That's a picture of me right there with it on my face.
Oh, there we go. Yeah.
With the Google eyes on the end of it.
But this new one's not the one that you have to put the electrodes on your eyelids and it like.
That's the next version.
Makes your eyes
it's
like.
It's actually needles
flutter.
That you have to put in, but you only have to do it once.
Now, is this modeled after the stormtroopers on Hoth?
It
in
does
the
look
Empire Strikes
kinda
Back.
Like.
It's like the stormtroopers, you know, from J.J. Abrams meet Google Cardboard. Is kind
so
of what it is.
It
it's
was,
like a very
it,
nice
so
version
it
of
was,
Google Cardboard.
It was really, it was better than I thought it was going to be. In fact, if you read like a lot of the reviews on it, a lot of the reviews of this thing say basically it's better than it has any right to be. Oh, yeah, it says right there. It's better than it has any right to be. And it's, so you put it on and it's got rotational tracking built in. It's got a few sensors in the thing and it also uses the phone's gyroscopes. And so... you put it in, and there's a couple of different apps that you can use. There's like a theater app where you can watch 3D movies. There are games where you can play. There's like a little top-down adventure game called like Hero Smash or something like that, where you're kind of looking down, and you've got a little avatar who runs around and like smashes skeletons and stuff. And the head tracking, the rotational tracking as you move your head around, is very solid. It didn't lag. It was very responsive, and it worked
really,
really
well.
Didn't make
you throw up.
Didn't make me throw up, although... I've played a couple of games with the Oculus Rift, and we could do this for like the whole rest of the show if you want to talk about VR. The Oculus Rift and the head-mounted displays in general, but the Rift in specific that I've tried, work best with games that are designed to take advantage of the fact that you're sitting in a chair. So the game that I like the most with the Rift is the space game that just came out in December, Elite Dangerous, which is a remake for people who are longtime gamers, a remake of 1984's Elite, the space trading game where you fly a spaceship around and stuff. So it's got Rift support, and it works beautifully because in real life, you sit in your computer chair, and you've got your joystick and whatever, and you put the thing on, and then in the head-mounted display in the Rift... you're looking out in your spaceship cockpit where you are sitting in a chair and you can move your head around and your guy in the thing moves his head around.
Just to note that the mic doesn't track as good as the...
Oh, I need to not move my head
this way. Oculus Rift.
Whereas if you use the Rift, if you use the head-mounted display VR Rift with like FPS games, first-person shooter games, and one recently came out, and actually a game in the Alien series called Alien Isolation. It was a great game. I had a good time playing it, and it had sort of hidden Rift support in it. Like, it was almost completed, and then they dropped it or something, but you can edit, like, one file and re-enable it. So you could turn that on, and I played it with the Rift on, and despite the fact that I could fly in space in Elite Dangerous for hours without any problems, playing like 15 minutes of first person made me just super nauseous because because you're still using WASD and the mouse to be just using the keyboard and the mouse to look around and the disconnect.
So your brain feels like you're moving, but
yeah,
your body feels like you're not moving.
Well, and you can turn your head and you turn your head in the game and you can look up and down and you can also kind of neat. You can kind of like peek around corners and do that. And that works, but to actually get anywhere, you need to like, you know, press W to walk.
So what
forward.
They should really do is they should make a game where in the game it's a first-person shooter, but you're actually sitting in a hovering chair.
Like
Stephen Hawking. Oh, this is
Stephen
awesome.
Stephen Hawking,
yeah,
adventure.
Give him some
or I was going to say like the Professor X adventure, but
Yeah. So when you're in a first person game and you walk forward and you use the mouse and turn and your field of view turns, but your head isn't moving, that disconnect. As some people, it doesn't bother them, but for me, it made me like within about 15 minutes, and it wasn't like really suddenly run to the toilet, but it was this creeping nausea that built.
Well, motion sickness is some of the worst kind of feelings I've ever had.
Seriously, you know, and then you take it off, and then I got to sit there for like 15 more minutes and be like, okay, my desk is.
They need a little syringe of Dramamine behind the ear when you put on the headset.
Yeah, brought to you by Technology Bites.
Although I do predict that there will be. What do we? Oh, is the call?
There's a call.
Oh,
there
cool.
Is.
And it's actually on topic.
It's on topic.
I do predict
about
that once
Hawking versus AI, the VR game.
Once the VR gets good enough to where it, you know, is extremely disorienting and you can cause people to throw up and just all this horribleness, there will be apps that are designed to that. Because, I mean, when we were kids, we spun around until we fell down, and you know that kids would be like, "Hey, try this on.
It'll be the puke challenge. How long can you last in the puke challenge?"
I'm watching without actually exerting any effort. So
have you ever watched a
kids growing fat
play
spinning in virtual chairs?
You ever watched a teenager play a first-person shooter on a nice big screen? They're going all over the place. I can't. My son, when he plays, there are times on certain games where I can't keep watching because you can feel that you get that frame.
Well, imagine it's this big in your whole field of view and in 3D.
And so, yeah. No, I can sadly imagine it too well.
All right.
We've got a call.
Yes.
We have a call?
Yes, we do.
Who is it? Bring him on.
All right, we're going to speak with Philip.
Philip, you're on the air with Technology Bites.
Hey, guys. You guys are pretty rowdy. I liked your conversations. I was had a question about whether we could put enough solar panels on everyone's roof in a neighborhood, let's say, and, you know, totally cover the roof with photovoltaics and generate enough energy to power charge up your car and power your house or whatever, and basically cut the energy companies or electric companies and cut the coal out out from underneath them.
And that's the idea. And the photovoltaics, they're getting to where I think they were like 40% effective a while ago. So they're getting better and better. And they've also got, you know, it used to be completely flat where you had to do it certain ways, but now you can actually spray it on to where you could have coatings that are like that. I don't think we're quite there. I think, like, you know, what Pete said, we've, you know, if the major players got behind it and said, hey, we want to be here in 5 years, or, you know, Texas has enough sun to do it, we've got enough wind to do it. But I don't think it's going to happen, you know, at a grassroots level, unless a lot of people like you and us.
The problem you
to
get to is, even if you have enough surface with all those, you know, on all those roofs, at night, you don't. You have to have someplace to store the power to have it be available. And
which means that you've got to have that receptacle there during the day.
You get all these car batteries that you're using, that they all these cars that have these high-speed batteries.
You've got to leave your car at home during the day for it to catch all the solar in the circumstance.
It's sort of perpetual motion, because you're using the car battery. You're charging the car battery to use it in the car, but you're also wanting to use it.
And we've had really bad weather, too, the last 5 or 6 days. I mean, how many overcast days, you know, have we had the last 8 or 9 days?
What did Superman do? Because didn't he get his powers from the rays of Earth yellow sun? What did he do at night?
I'm assuming ultraviolet light.
I heard something about photosynthesis photovoltaic cells, where you capture the photosynthesis, and or you could capture the wave of light.
Where it does it as a chemical thing and basically produces produces like fuel, or does the hydrogen.
Oh, okay.
You have to store it. Basically, you have to store it somehow, though. You have to either store it in
a
battery.
How big of
a
battery do we need? And how far along is the batteries right now? Because we got car batteries, like you said, that are going to be able to go, you know, 200 miles.
Yeah, most car batteries are LiPo right now, aren't they? Lithium polymer?
Yeah, there are companies coming along that are trying to do what are called utility scale batteries, where it's a large battery that big companies use it instead of a diesel generator. And some of that. The problem on getting, when you start getting into the numbers and that, is you needed like an electrical engineer who really understands this stuff to get you good numbers when you're talking about for a whole neighborhood and that.
Right. So you need to know how much you're using, what's your power load, and then how much you need to store to.
Yeah. Step one would be, well, you could basically look at all your past electric bills, and a lot of companies now, the online will tell you a lot.
And then get sued by the electric companies.
Well, the other
passing
thing to do is to start with, you do it where you do a grid-tied system. You put the panels on your house. You stay hooked up to the grid, you know, where you feed back power and all that kind of stuff. And then once you've got enough people where you hit critical mass, then you do it all at once. Then you hook them all up together and share the power or whatever.
Then we have the revolution.
And then the time then the pitchforks come out.
Here's another question about how much storage you need for run something. I use a CPAP machine, and I go RVing, and I want to use, instead of running my RV the whole time, I want to have a battery that I can hook up to my CPAP machine and run my battery off.
They make battery operated CPAPs.
There's a company there's something, it's called like Yeti something. I saw it. It was like a solar, basically sort of a solar generator. Although you can plug it into a wall and charge it up too. And the idea is that they've kind of tried to get it something that you could charge up and take camping, or that you could buy solar panels and hook up to it and recharge it during the day, and then have electricity at night. Since now we're also, hey, I'm not going to talk down about anybody who really, really wants to have to be able to recharge their laptop and their phone at night, even if they're camping in the middle of nowhere. But for that kind of camper,
right? So what spaghetti something? That's the battery, or what
Yeti.
Is that?
Yeti was the. I thought I saw it on like Uncrate.com like this week. So you may be able to. You may be able to find it. It's there's a company that does, their whole thing is all this solar stuff. They do the they sell the panels. It's like good something solar, and if you Google those things, you'll find if you do Yeti solar.
Well, and what I'm seeing, at least there was at the Maker Fair this year, there's a guy out there with a solar panel, and he was talking about pumping energy back into his electrical system and feeding it back, and the panels that you need to do this are pretty large, so I don't think the panel that he had on display out there would crush the top of your RV, or at least put some strain on it.
Oh, well, here it's Goal Zero is the company, and then okay. They have different size. There's different wattage ones. They get up to ones that are made to be outside your house. They call them solar generators. Yeah, Goal Zero. They have a 400.
What about malleable solar panels where you could have more surface area that could go around your house or around
They're making those now. So they've got some bendable solar panels that are pretty inexpensive. I've got a few of those.
But the more efficient solar panels are ones that track the sun, mm-hmm. so that the sun obviously is not in the same position in the sky all the time that it's out. So you actually want to have your panels to where they can rotate and face the sun and get maximum
exposure. Either
that,
or if they're cheap enough that you cover all the surfaces of the roof to face all the directions that you might need. There are websites and stuff about kind of getting the most out of solar that can probably tell you more than we can on.
Yeah, I think we're kind of coming up, even though people have been installing this and doing this since late 70s, since the 80s, it's kind of coming into the golden age of do-it-yourself solar now, so there are a ton of resources out there. Just go look.
Finance it and do the installation and work with you. Unfortunately, I think we're getting to the end of the show, so we're going to let you go.
Thanks for your call.
Appreciate you guys. Thanks a lot.
Thank you. All right. Well, we are winding down now as we get ready to make way for other things here at the radio station. Technology Bites is really happy that you tuned in. I'm also going to start referring to our show in the third person. I do want to remind everyone that fundraiser starts next week. If you want to go ahead and hit the tip jar now and get us some money in the bank, I'm sure our goal will probably be somewhere around the $1,600 range.
$1 billion.
Or something. So go ahead and make a pledge if you care to. It's pretty much we'll be trying something with this format and also doing fundraising in between. We'd like to have a lively discussions here on Technology Bites, and we like to continue that through the fundraising, but we need active participation. So if you're liking what you're hearing here on Technology Bites, next week is the time to let us know, and we'll be hitting you.
If we make our goal, we'll do normal show. Same promises before.
As soon as we make our goal, we'll stop asking for money. So we have a set dollar amount, and if we can reach that, as soon as we reach it, we'll move on. So you have that to look forward to. Next week, Lee will be out next week. You are going to
I will
not be here.
I will be in Deutschland next week.
That is very good timing. This is a fundraiser.
He's
got the Dwight magic. Instead of getting
in the country.
Yeah, instead of getting sick around fundraiser, he'll just go on.
Leave the country.
In Germany, fundraisers you.
Although now that we've just dropped the bad German accents, you are going to get your butt kicked when you go over there. So unclench. Be prepared for the German beatdown.
I'll buy lots of beer for everyone.
Bring it back.
I have to figure out a way to do that.
Throw some Deutschmarks in the tip jar. We'll be fine.
They use euros.
Nice. Oh, there you go.
Just throw some euros in.
Say what you will about the tenets of National Socialism, but it's at least an ethos.
Thanks for tuning in to Technology Bites. We're glad you were here, and we'll see you next week. I'm Jay Lee.
I'm Peter Hughes.
I'm Flicted.
I'm Barrett.
I'm Lee.
And he's
Groovehouse.
KPFT is seeking prospective volunteers to help in our music library. Our music library is a massive resource for our DJs and listeners. Volunteers will be assigned a number of different tasks, from refiling CDs to converting music for inclusion into the upgrade of our music library focused on digital. We're also looking for people who can spot up-and-coming bands to feature on our HD3 music stream. Successful volunteers will be team players who work well with others, have the ability to alphabetize, and can manage multiple tasks. Shifts happen weekdays, 10 a.m. to 6 p.m. This is an unpaid volunteer gig, but it is one of the most fun times ever for anyone into music, music discovery, and turning others on to outstanding music. Interested? Drop an email to music@kpft.org with the subject line Music Volunteer. We'll take it from there. This is 90.1 FM, KPFT Houston, kpft.org worldwide.
Greetings, this is Brother Robert Muhammad, inviting the greater Houston community to join the Black Heritage Society and its founder, Ovi Duncantel, for the 37th original Martin Luther King Day Parade. This will take place on Monday, January 19th at 10 a.m. to celebrate the great legacy of Dr. Martin Luther King. It will start at Minute Maid Park. So again, that's Monday, January 19th at 10 a.m. at Minute Maid Park. It's sponsored in part by Pacifica Radio, KPFT 90.1 FM. For more information, call 713-236-1700. That's 713-236-1700. Or visit www.heritagesociety.org.